Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Tuesday, March 9th, 2010 Carborough Board of Aldermen meeting. The first item on our agenda is the consent agenda. Mr. Manager.
Item 1 is approval of the minutes of the previous meetings of February 23rd and 28th. Item 2 is a request to set a public hearing for the temporary street closing permit application for the Carborough Classic Endurance Sports Festival. Item 3 is a request to set a public hearing on the temporary street closing permit application for the Springfest bike riding benefit, benefiting the MS Society. Item 4 is a resolution in support of pursuing Google Ultra High Speed Internet. Item 5 is a resolution requiring town advisory board members to attend or receive training.
Move adoption of the consent agenda.
Second.
All right, the consent agenda has been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passed unanimously.
Can I make a quick comment, Mark?
Yes, ma'am.
The agenda item about the temporary street closing for the Carborough Classic Endurance Sports Festival, maybe we could suggest to them that they have their classic benefit, Habitat for Humanity, for maybe Orange County next year instead of Durham. Just a thought.
It's a good thought.
Mm-hmm. Good thought, yeah.
And they're doing it here, you know?
Yeah, they're located over there.
Yeah.
Anyway, all right. And before we begin our work session, I have one announcement that I wanted to make, which is I understand this Thursday at 7 p.m. at the Carborough Century Center, the Carborough Recreation and Parks Department is putting on a talent show. I believe the admission is free. It's going to be 7 p.m. at the Century Center this coming Thursday evening.
Oh, Alan's saying it's $3, Mark.
It's $3.
Yeah.
It might as well be free. It's practically free. It's $3.
Yeah.
And my friend Jerry Williams is going to be in it. All right. Not the one who organizes the music festival, though. I should disclose, in all fairness, a different Jerry Williams. Anyway, all right. Item B1. Presentation of strategies considered by the Local Living Economy Task Force.
Gary Cramling, one of the members of the LLE, is making the presentation on behalf of the group.
Good evening. I am Gary Cramling, and I'm a member of the Local Living Economy Task Force. I'm here representing the rest of us. I'm pleased to put before you today our final report as we have completed the charge as you've assigned to us. Let me move on. These are the members of the task force. There were 10 of us. Sammy Slade acted as our chair, and I should note that for the first 16 months of our meeting, Sammy was not a Board of Aldermen person, but we allowed him to remain chair while he was in his elected position. And we had staff liaisons James Harris and Steve Stewart. My comments tonight will be fairly brief because I believe the document pretty well speaks for itself. I will give summaries of our recommendations as well as give you a little bit more information on the format of the document to help you as you review it going forward. This was our charge. What we basically took out of this was that we were to investigate and evaluate strategies by which the town of Carborough can help foster the development of a sustainable, locally owned and run economy. That's really what we focused in on and what we took to heart. The table of contents is found in your document. It starts with an introduction where we attempt to define what is local, which seems a pretty important prerequisite as we're talking about local living economies, as well as talk about why local is important. We follow that by six main recommendations. Why six? Good question. We didn't start out thinking we would have six recommendations. We didn't know how many recommendations we would have. But after going through dozens and dozens of potential recommendations, these just seemed to continue to float to the top as the committee evaluated them. So that's why we ended up with these six, and these are the six I'm going to focus on this evening. Finally, I wanted to mention that there are items in progress. Some of these items had started prior to our committee meeting. Some of these items have started since the task force had been meeting. Some are pretty much in the shape that they need to be. Others really should be expanded as we go forward in support of our local living economy. And I'll speak to these. Finally, the appendixes. And as much as they're appendixes, this really is the meat of our presentation. We developed worksheets for each and every recommendation or action item that we considered. Some are more fully developed than others as we determined they would be a viable type of action item for the town of Carrboro or not. There are two appendices. The first one includes all the worksheets or recommendations in support of these six recommendations that I'm going to present tonight. So those are the supporting worksheets for those six recommendations. In Appendix B, which is much larger, are a lot of secondary action items and recommendations that may be in support of some of the other recommendations or may just stand on their own. We still feel they're valuable to consider and to look at, but they're not necessarily the basis for our six recommendations this evening. So the introduction. Again, we met for 18 months. Is that clear enough to you? Is there a focus that I can...
It's a little.
Autofocus will help. So moving on, and you'll see as you follow in your packet, this is attachment B3, or page 3. We met for 18 months. We're thankful for the opportunity to consider all these opportunities and present them to you tonight. We used, as a basis for our work, Michael Schumann's book, The Small Mart Revolution. That was very purposeful. Michael Schumann is known nationally as a professional advocate for local living economies. He lives and breathes this type of work and has done this work for many, many years. In addition, he's a co-founder to the Business Alliance for Local Living Economies, which we'll speak more to tonight. I believe he's been invited to Carrboro on at least two occasions to give lectures, which I believe many of you actually have heard and many in the community have heard. So this is the book that we based a lot of our work on, although we did it with an eye toward Carrboro and what is specific and unique about Carrboro. We had 10 members on our team. Within the book, they divide citizen groups into these five categories as they participate in the economy: entrepreneurs, consumers, investors, community builders or community advocates, and finally, policymakers like yourselves. Because there were 10 of us, we decided to divide and conquer and have two people focus on each one of these areas, go in, research it in depth, bring ideas back to the larger group, have that larger group discuss them, and then take those best ideas and go back, distill those, and fill out these worksheets and come up with some solid recommendations. So that's how we went about our business. The standardized format we felt was very important as a means of consistently going about each one of these recommendations. And we've included a lot of the other recommendations just for background, and some of those may rise to the top as we go forward. What is local? This was one of the first things we had to do as a committee, and that was attempt to define local. It's a difficult task. We spent a lot of grueling time in several meetings discussing this. And what we found and what we felt we were going to find is there is no single definition for what is local. But even so, it's very important to make an attempt to define local for yourself and for your community. If you don't, you run the risk of not getting a lot of the benefits that are ascribed to a local living economy with local business ownership, local folks running it, using local inputs to build local products and services. So in the Small Mart Revolution, Schumann takes a stab at this. He develops something he calls the purchasing ladder, which is a list that a consumer can follow when they make the conscious decision to choose to buy local goods and services. And this is how it's spelled out. The first is to buy less. That may seem like an odd thing, but in Carrboro, we actually do that pretty well. Buy less can mean a lot of different things. It could mean, rather than being in your car all the time, using public transportation, your bicycle, walking. It could be reusing products that you already have in your house or gifting them to someone else. The really, really free market is a good example of buying less. So this is one of the first things to look at. A truly self-reliant community learns to do more with less. And so this is why this is at the top of this list. Secondly is buy local, and he calls this the triple crown. This is the perfect local purchase of a good and service, where you're in essence buying from a locally owned store a locally made good or service made with locally sourced inputs. You can find these things, but they're far and few between.
Gary? Mm-hmm. I'm always the one that asks the questions that other people may feel are stupid, so that other people don't have to ask them. Mm-hmm. What's an input?
An input is that, for instance, with a physical product, there are a lot of things that go into making that product, the materials, the labor, and so forth. So the inputs that are needed to form that final product could come from faraway places,
right. Okay.
Or they could come from your own community. And that's true of physical resources, natural resources, even the folks that you have working on it. If a portion of your product is being assembled somewhere else, well, not only are the raw materials coming from somewhere else, but the labor is coming from somewhere else also. So
it's everything that it takes to put something on the shelf or in the ground.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. So we don't have perfect choices. So number three, buy local, we have imperfect choices. And that is, you look at all three of these things. Is a particular service or business selling goods, are they locally owned? Are they selling locally made goods using locally made inputs? Maybe you can get one of those things. Maybe you can get two of those things. But getting some number of them is a whole lot better than not. And so typically what you're doing are making these imperfect purchases, but still they are magnified in how they support the local community. Next is buy regional. If you really can't find these goods and services locally, then regionally you might be able to. The multiplier, the economic multiplier won't be as good, but it's still going to be better than if you're going even farther out.
Can I sort of ask you a question about mm-hmm. that? When you talk about regional for us specifically, mm-hmm. did the committee say Chapel Hill, Carrboro, Durham, Chapel Hill, Carrboro, Hillsboro, Chapel Hill, Carrboro, Eflin? Cedar Grove or Pittsburgh, or what did y'all consider to be regional?
It depends on the good in service being considered. Obviously, strict geographic boundaries are sometimes important. I know the farmers market works that way. Mm-hmm. Other times, a taxing authority, whether it be the town of Carrboro, Orange County, that becomes important, especially when we're talking about economic multipliers. So there are different ways of defining local, and there are different reasons for picking these mm-hmm. areas. But yeah, regionally speaking, could be just Carrboro, it could be just Orange County, it could be the larger Piedmont area. But generally speaking, we're talking that type of area. Then it says buy local. And what that means is there are other types of small, independently owned businesses doing the same sort of thing in other communities. And you can make relationships with these other types of businesses and do direct marketing between them, rather than having to use middleman with larger corporations and so forth. So that's another option down the ladder. And finally, we've all heard of buy fair trade. Typically, you hear this used in the coffee and cocoa world, whereby you're taking out middlemen again. You're paying a fair wage to the people who are actually harvesting these products and so forth. And that's something that you can do for those products that truly aren't available, you know, in your local community. And then, of course, everything else, Walmart. So that's one interpretation of what is local. You probably are going to develop your own interpretation that might look something like that. It may not look off. But it is important you attempt to define that for yourself. Next, you'd ask yourself, well, that's how you do local, but why would you want to do local? This comes from the Business Alliance for Local Living Economies, that organization I mentioned Michael Schumann co-founded. This organization is a national organization that provides resources for local communities like ourselves to build business networks to support local living economies. In fact, a business network has started here in Carrboro called Locomotive that used Bali as a resource in order to begin. So here are some very good reasons that have research behind them why a person would like to buy local. Buying local recirculates money within the community. It's very well known that local business people often shop with other local business people. The longer you can keep that money in the community, the more benefit to the community. And that's where you see those multiplier effects. That's true of consumers also. Local businesses categorically provide the most jobs. One-of-a-kind businesses are very integral to a community's identity. That's very, very true for Carrboro. You certainly know when you get into a city that doesn't have those type of businesses and it feels just homogenized, and you could be in Iowa or you could be in Florida. It really doesn't matter. There's nothing distinctive about those communities, and you tend not want to be in those communities. Local business owners tend to stay in their communities, and they continue to invest in their communities and in their business. Customer service is better. They have pride in their businesses, and that pride is seen not only with them, but also with their employees. There is more competition, and there certainly is more diversity of goods when you're dealing with a whole lot of small players rather than a few large players. They have less of an environmental impact. They fit very easily into the confines of an existing city center. They don't require the resources of a town that these larger big box national and regional retailers do. Their public benefits far outweigh their public costs. And they encourage investment in the community, and they give more to nonprofits. In fact, there's been a measure that they give up to 350% more to local nonprofits than regional and national companies do.
may not advertise it as well, though.
Right. Now I want to give you just a quick summary of the six recommendations. And I want to emphasize that this is a very quick summary. In order to really understand and fully appreciate these recommendations, you need to drive down into the worksheets. And you'll see at the bottom here of every single one of these summarized recommendations, you'll see an appendix listed, and this came from the Community Builders section, the Think Local First campaign worksheet. This particular recommendation is probably our most complex. It's something that is absolutely ongoing. It doesn't last for just a finite period of time, and it involves a whole lot of support for the community. Starts out, the best way to influence buying habits to foster a sustainable, locally owned, locally run economy is to educate the community via a link, Think Local First campaign. We recommend a long-term initiative, not a long-term initiative, we recommend an ongoing initiative with multiple components where we showcase our businesses and we educate our consumers why it is it's important to shop local. Elements of this are include creating a Think Local First brand, a brand that really identifies those products and services that are locally based. By identifying and promoting local businesses through advertising, many promotions and industry campaigns. This is a huge element. We would focus on all the diversified business sectors within the community and develop campaigns specifically for them to strengthen them, whether that's the automotive service campaign, the natural health services businesses, any of the trades, any of these types of business sectors should be addressed through these industry and promotional campaigns. And down in the worksheets, we have very specific examples of trade groups that we would consider promoting. And finally, forums and co-branding with other organizations. As we developed these initiatives, every attempt was made to really be inclusive of all business sectors, all members of the community, all businesses. This is something the entire community participates in. The government participates in, community advocates participate in, consumers participate, and certainly the business community participates. So it's a very inclusive program. And each one of these things isn't necessarily led by any one group or another. Some might be led by a business network. Others might be led by the town. Others might be led by community advocates. That's how these things work, and that's how they should work. With each campaign, there certainly should be some measure in order to find out if it's successful or not. And so built into each recommendation are measures to assure that as we spend time and money on these types of campaigns, that we're actually seeing real benefit from them. And again, I would ask you to refer to the worksheet in Appendix A to really get a better feel for what's really all involved in this recommendation. The second recommendation is for the town to consider local options for banking, investment, and procurement. We assert that a vibrant and sustainable local living economy requires exploration and support of more locally based banking options for the town's services and investments and to serve our residents and businesses. Local banking options are key to keeping capital local and enabling more locally focused lending. Also, as the town begins to approach this, they certainly are going to be leading by example, and I think we'll find a lot of businesses and individuals following suit. We recommend that the town investigate more options for local banking, and we do understand that that effort is underway. We mentioned specifically the arrival of the Latino Community Credit Union. We've since learned that a credit union is not an option for our government, but it's certainly an option for a lot of businesses and consumers in our community. And we're requesting that the Economic Sustainability Commission actually develop a methodology to follow, which allows us to help evaluate a lot of these banking institutions, not just for the town services, but for business use and citizen use. We think that'd be a valuable service for our community. And in terms of procurement, certainly we would love to see more and more procurement of goods and services from the town by local businesses to the degree possible and legal under our current laws. And again, all these efforts can be measured by the institutions we choose, how much lending and services they're providing to our community, not just to our town. And you'll see in Appendix A, there's specifically two worksheets that speak to this.
Gary? I've read this book, Michael Schumann's book, and in particular, recently I was studying his chapter that dealt with local banking. Mm-hmm. And even he, you know, kind of acknowledges that that's one of the hardest to measure.
It is. Your hands are somewhat tied.
Yeah, and by not just regulation, but simply even by effect or tracking effect, you know. Can you speak any more to that? Or?
Well, when you're dealing with smaller institutions, there certainly is a lot more communication. There's potentially a lot more accountability that can be had. It's not that the town doesn't necessarily even have to do their services with that bank, but by having a relationship with that bank, they can come to agreements with which how they're going to support the community of businesses and people in the community and so forth. So by dealing with these institutions on a smaller scale, we feel just more is possible.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. The third recommendation is the town maintenance and promotion of the revolving loan fund. Historically, this has proven to be quite a successful program for the town with very few exceptions. We have brought new thriving businesses into the town. We've also allowed businesses to continue to grow and expand. The fund is fairly depleted right now, and for that reason, we feel now is an opportune time to conduct a full review of the Carborough Loan Fund, looking at the qualification process, making certain that there are measures of success built into the program, that we are identifying and really prioritizing those types of local businesses that we want to attract to the town in how we market this program. Also, we think through either stimulus funds or some other source, there may be a way to expand the capital that's available for this program and potentially to create a secondary fund that's a private fund, possibly offering funds at higher interest rates but still lower interest rates than are available at local banking institutions. And finally, a local business survey, a very comprehensive local business survey, would go a long way toward informing us what businesses need in terms of capital, land space, expansion, and so forth. So this is our third recommendation. Town assertive stimulus funds. There's never been more money floating around, certainly from a federal level, than there has been in the last couple years. A whole lot of this money through the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act has already been accounted for, but a lot of it still hasn't been accounted for. Of the $862 billion, $6.1 billion has been made available to North Carolina. And by going to www.ncrecovery.gov, you'll actually see how they've broken down these funds and where they intend on spending them in terms of programs. There are specific programs where this money hasn't all been spent that are potential programs where Carrboro can directly or indirectly potentially secure some of these funds for projects. Obviously, we would like projects that either directly or indirectly support our local businesses, infrastructure for local businesses, and so forth. And that's what some of these do. There is CDBG money, these community development block grant funds, a lot of transportation and infrastructure improvements. There's a lot of money for energy efficiency and conservation for local government as well as businesses. Also weatherization, again, following the same thing, it's just listed separately. These are just but a small subset of some of the categories that are potentially available to the town directly or indirectly. In addition, there are other business support organizations in the local community that provide valuable services for our local businesses and entrepreneurs that are looking at starting businesses here. And I think now is a good time to make a new and concerted effort to publicize the capabilities of these organizations, and I've listed several of them here. In addition, several of these organizations are able to secure new funding themselves through some of these sources. So where they may have been somewhat strapped in the past, some of these organizations will actually have more funds available to them than they have in the past. So now is a perfect time to make the business community aware of these valuable services. And the last item there, this is still being discussed on a federal level, but $30 billion of this stimulus, federal stimulus money, is being considered to be redirected to community banks for small business loans. If that happens, our community banks are going to be much better capitalized in order to help our local businesses. Our fifth recommendation is a town branding and marketing effort. If this looks familiar, it's because you've seen it before. In 2006, you received the RTS report that looked at the Carrboro economy and gave recommendations on how to move forward in improving the economy. One of their main recommendations was exactly this. We actually developed this before we even looked at the RTS report, and we're actually surprised at the similarities. It's absolutely the case that effective branding influences consumer behavior. Consumers gravitate toward those brands, those products and services that come to embody the traits and characteristics that are important to them. The consistent use and promotion of a town graphic and tagline, which would be developed, would provide a visual hook to uniquely identify those businesses, programs, events, products, people, and the physical environment that define Carrboro. If this is properly developed, it doesn't just help our existing businesses, but it helps those businesses that are coming to the community. When a successful brand is applied to a new and unproven business, product, or event, the goal is for the positive attributes of that brand to be passed on to potential consumers so they choose to engage, try, or participate. We recommend that the board contract with a professional advertising firm to develop a town graphic and tagline and to develop at least a baseline marketing plan for how to use it.
Eric, do you know if there are cases of communities developing a brand without a professional marketing firm, or like cases like well-known ones like the Keep Austin Weird, for example, were those developed by professionals, or are there cases where the communities involved, or do you know that?
I know specifically in that case, it was somewhat organic, but then after that began, professional advertising outfits were engaged in order to take that brand and to make the most use out of it. So the brand itself developed organically, but then professionals came in to help really maximize its potential.
Okay. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. And then the final sixth recommendation, and that is the support of a local economy business network. Local economy initiatives should not all be driven by the town. In fact, I would argue the majority of them probably shouldn't be driven by the town. Local business networks play a leading, if not the leading, role in building and sustaining a local living economy. We should certainly leverage and work with these business networks in going forward in implementing some of these initiatives. They need to take a leadership role. They need to be at the table, as well as community advocates and our consumers. An engaged local economy business network is really taking the pulse of the business community. They're best able to gauge needs, and after gauging those needs, to help fill those needs with the help of partners like the town. We have a tremendous number of resources, the town does, and not just capital resources, but resources that we can aid these business networks in supporting our local living economy. One such network was just developed, the Locomotive Business Network, that is a Bali network, and I'll refer to that here in a minute. I mentioned we had some items in progress. The revolving loan fund, obviously, has been around for some time. Been very successful. We think there certainly can be an enhancement to the program and better promotion of its availability, as well as better promotion to the types of businesses that we're looking at attracting to the town. I mentioned the Locomotive Bali chapter. A chapter of the Business Alliance for Local and Living Economies was formed not within our committee, just but by local business people in late 2009. They called themselves Locomotive, and their mission is to provide a supportive atmosphere for local businesses and educate the local community on the importance of shopping locally. Obviously, a very trusted partner in moving forward with these initiatives. Business directory. Carrboro has long developed a business directory, at least annually. This year was particularly special because the Carrboro Citizen coordinated, along with the Economic and Community Development Office, to really go out and get much more current information on those businesses that are out there, even businesses that don't necessarily have a sign that they hang out front. So the information that is currently available is much better than it's ever been. And then the Citizen went ahead and published this in the directory. We feel this can go even a step further by making an electronic database available that can be updated not quarterly or semi-annually, but can be updated at will. And also with something like that, you can build in protections for privacy and so forth. So this is something that has been going on for some time, and we think there's a lot more that could be done with it going forward. A business survey. In early 2009, again, the Economic and Community Development Office put out a survey asking businesses to put together a list of the top 50 things to do in Carrboro. We feel a good second prerequisite piece in support of local living economy is understanding what our businesses need to be successful, grow, and expand. So we feel a very comprehensive business survey needs to be developed and pushed out to these business owners in order to get a much better feel for what they need in terms of capital, space and resources. Entrepreneurship training. Obviously something that you can always do more at, but the ECD office has actually done a really good job with this in the last few years. As an example, in this last year, they partnered with the SBTDC, and they provided several training opportunities. This one was hosted and called the Going Green series of workshops, where they offered emerging local businesses information and strategy and best practices in growing a vibrant and sustainable business. Really, really important, very well received, and I hope we see a lot more of this. Economic asset and leakage analysis. Again, going back to the Regional Technology Strategies, or RTS, report from 2006, they actually did a very good job detailing Carrboro's economy, listing our assets, which are the products, services, infrastructure, and resident capabilities we have available. They also did a leakage analysis and talked about those products and services that we don't have in the community, as well as any infrastructure deficits. So this is something that we absolutely can go back to and utilize as we look to expand our local living economy. Finally, I wanted to, for purposes of clarity, look at one worksheet. So as you go through the many worksheets that we have in our report, you'll have a better feel for how we actually put these together. This is going to be the town branding and marketing worksheet, which is attachment B20 in your report. It looks like this. And this was the standardized form we used to develop all of our action items, all of our recommendations. You notice in the left-hand column, we start with a description, a purpose, what are the actual steps, action items to take, who's going to perform these, what is really important in this initiative for it to succeed, what human and material resources are required, what's the time frame, what really is the benefit, what's the actual cost. And then in terms of other worksheets, because so many of these worksheets were interrelated, what other worksheets are related to this one, such that if you really wanted to understand this, you may also want to reference these other worksheets. And finally, every recommendation needs to have a measure. You need to have a way of assuring yourself that the recommendation, the action items, are successful or not successful. So just quickly, this is the description found at the top of that. We already have a unique and successful brand, whether we thought we did or not, but we feel a whole lot more could be done with that brand. RTS report agreed with us and recommended initiating a branding and marketing effort. What's the purpose of this recommendation? Well, the use and promotion of town graphic and tagline would offer a consistent visual reminder for those participating in the Carrboro community and economy. What are the steps? We recommend that the Board of Aldermen and town staff and the appropriate advisory boards undertake the following. The ESC and the Appearance Commission together can define the process for hiring and managing a professional advertising firm to develop a graphic and tagline. The town's ECD office will ultimately manage this after it's defined. Hire a professional advertising, marketing, or branding firm. They're going to engage the Carrboro community, possibly via this local first forum. They're going to develop this identity and tagline. They're going to publish it electronically for the use of the community. And then they're going to, through a marketing plan, offer the most effective and efficient uses regarding its use. Examples of our use could be letter publications, business directories, websites, social media, promotional materials, as well as physical things like posters, flyers, downtown flags, and then those two wonderful entrance signs that we have. And also, as events come to town, like some of the ones we talked about earlier this evening, we can request that any of these event organizers who request town facilities or require permitting to integrate our Carrboro graphic and tagline into their promotional materials as a means of branding their event as something that's happening in Carrboro.
Mm-hmm. How is that protected? I mean, how do you stop some, large corporate ne'er-do-well from coming in and kind of stealing the brand and saying, we're this huge development corporation from California, and we're building this, stuff you don't like, but we're going to slap the Carrboro brand on it. How do you protect that?
You've got several attorneys on the board with you. I'm sure they can help you.
This one can't. I know there's trademark protection, but I don't know the extent to which I've just never had an opportunity to explore whether it applies to municipal. It probably does.
I guess that's a further down the road conversation, right. But it just, you're always in danger of being co-opted by the evil forces.
Once you decided to pick a particular graphic, you could have it trademarked, both federally and state. The Secretary of State's office is where you file for a trademark.
And Joel has it.
For the state.
I trust you're all going to work this out.
Yeah, I don't want to waylay the conversation. Okay. I'm just sitting there thinking,
So, next steps. Each worksheet is going to have very specific next steps. By whom? The ESC and Appearance Commission, they define the process. This firm creates the graphic and tag, develops the marketing campaign, engages the community. The ECD office puts this into use. The IT office incorporates this information into a website, into social network, and so forth. And finally, the town public works office installs new entrance signs, banners, and so forth. So really, who's involved in these initiatives? Steps to succeed. What we mean by this is what are the critical elements for this to succeed? We feel there are two. If the community isn't intimately involved in this, it won't fly. The community has to be intimately involved in a branding and marketing effort. And secondly, we as a committee really feel that we do need the services of a professional advertising firm to carry this off. Resources needed. Here we're talking human material, town staff time, community participation, material, signs. Time frame. This, different worksheets, different initiatives have different time frames. We feel that we should start fairly soon, but not necessarily immediately, 6 months' time. What's the benefit? Obviously, new businesses and events will be drawn to Carrboro by the brand. The visual brand will act as a reminder of all things Carrboro, and the signs, flags will really help define Carrboro as a location. Cost. Depending on how much advertising work you want them, a professional firm to do, probably anywhere from $5,000 to $20,000. Much more minimal costs for signs, flags, website, and social media development. And, of course, even less cost for conversion of letterhead, business directory, and promotional materials. Fit with items. What this means is this worksheet is really related to, and in order to fully understand it, you really might want to reference these other worksheets. In this case, the Local First Forum, Community Event Link-ins, and the Create Unique Link Local Carrboro logo brand. So there's going to be fit-in items with each of these worksheets. And finally, I mentioned a measure. Measure the graphic use by the town, local businesses and local groups, gauge familiarity of the Brown among Carborough residents and others throughout the region, and then obviously, are you growing your business base? Are your businesses thriving? Are you bringing new businesses into town? That's pretty much what I wanted to say. It took a little longer than I had hoped, but that's it. So thank you on behalf of our task force. We appreciate the opportunity to present this to you and fully trust that you'll take it under consideration.
Joel.
Thank you. I think y'all have done a really great job. You know, my favorite thing is measures, and I like to see measures and comparisons to see where people are going, so just in case they're going the wrong way, they can kind of move in the right direction. One thing that is an overall concern for me is a discussion that we have frequently, and I don't know if y'all discussed it or not, and maybe y'all can discuss it as part of your ongoing work, is when you have successful businesses that move because there's no more space. And there are two businesses that people in Carborough and Chapel Hill frequent all the time that were in Carborough but moved. That was the Yarn Store, which has gone to a larger space in Chapel Hill, and the Quilting Store, which has gone to a larger space in Chapel Hill. I mean, hugely larger space. And yeah. So one of the things, I guess, is a concern of mine is how do we sort of, it seems like we incubate these great businesses, and then they move to someplace else. And was there a lot of discussion about that, or are y'all going to be discussing it?
Well, our task force has ended. So these discussions will happen in advisory groups going forward. We did discuss that. And part of a comprehensive business survey is talking to these businesses before they need to make the decision to move to understand really what their needs are. And if their needs are they need more space, well, that's fine. At what price per square foot? And then is this industrial space? Is this retail space? What is it exactly? And then using that information, bringing it to the town, making it available to the ECD office, and then hopefully finding solutions for them. And then finally pushing it out to private developers who are willing to put these buildings up or retool buildings that are already there. So a lot of it is talking with the businesses early on, and that's where these business networks will really be critical, because business owners talk to each other much more frequently than they talk to local government or anyone else. And starting with this locomotive group, I think we finally have a group that is really going to have a pulse on the business community, and we'll see the writing on the wall in these cases and can then communicate that information out to the people who need it.
Randy, and then
I wanted to thank Gary for presenting, and Peter and Sammy for helping Gary put this together from our last meeting. I just want to publicly thank the dozen folks who worked on this. To look at it from this point of view in the report is pretty amazing. Sometimes I felt like our movement was glacial. I want to thank Dan for bringing a format to this, and Sammy for his leadership on as chair. It was a lot of hard work, and Carborough is very excited to be involved this way, and I think it really puts us at the forefront in leadership in terms of local first. So it's very exciting, and I want to thank you all.
All right, the Oscars were two nights ago. Jackie, and then Dan. Yeah.
Great work, everybody. Thank you. And it's so understandable. After I caught on to what an input is, it's a really understandable.
It is
simple to read, but good thick stuff. It's I think it's worthy of publishing. It's really good. Thank you. I'm the liaison to the Arts Commission, mm-hmm. and just last night we were talking about kind of getting more notice for what the Arts Commission does. There are several big events coming up real soon that are good for business and the local economy. We're having a Carrboro Arts Project, and there'll be music connected with that, as well as our Poet Laureate with his inaugural poem for the Arts Project. But we've also, we're developing a, one of those oval-shaped bumper sticker things, you know, and we have a logo, but we're wanting to work more closely with other parts of the town, because we know that the arts are integral. So so this is really neat, and I hope that, you know, as we move forward, that, that the arts are definitely, you know, in that mix. And it's, you're a really good presenter, Gary.
That, yeah, well done.
Yeah, you did a really good job.
No, this is the committee's work. I'm just...
Dan.
Yeah, I want to just add a couple of appreciations. One that Randy missed was to Robert Dixon, who served as the secretary for the task force. And I feel very conflicted about the town under-resourcing some of our committees and task forces, and Robert stepped up in this case and served, you know, as well as participating, taking notes and writing up minutes and listening to tapes and all that kind of stuff, which is a lot of work, and was really important. I also want to add, since I had nothing to do with preparing the final report, I can say that I'm really impressed with the work you all did on putting this together, that it is really, I think, well, Jackie said it very well, but it's a very coherent and useful document that I think we can come back to again and again in the future as we progress through these recommendations. And I think it's also a document that could provide a model for other communities who want to be able to do similar kinds of projects. A question for you, Gary. In looking over the main recommendations, it strikes me that there's a pretty strong connection between number one, the Think Local First campaign, number five, the branding, and number six, the support of the local economy network. And I wonder if you have any elaboration on the connection of those. I mean, because in a way you can undertake all three of those, it would seem, you know, sort of as a related and parallel step.
I believe you can. And again, the first recommendation, once you really look at the worksheet, it's a series of recommendations with many things that can happen in parallel. Specifically, the branding and marketing effort, that's even something that can happen independent of that first recommendation, because that's something that really supports the entire town, all types of businesses and so forth. It really puts Carrboro on the map as a destination for people to visit, to spend money here, to live here, to start a business here. There's a whole lot that can be done with that effort, independent of some of the initiatives under the first forum.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. I should also mention, in terms of the final report, Sammy and Peter spent a tremendous amount of time working on this, but Margo Carmichael Lester also was instrumental in helping to put it together, so we're indebted to Margo.
All right. Thank you, Gary. Oh, yes.
Yeah, I guess unless other people have questions or general comments, I want to make some suggestions in terms of moving forward on these items if people are interested in that discussion.
Yeah, I'm ready to do that.
Okay. Because basically I'm focusing on these top six recommendations and not trying to second guess the task force on what those should be. In terms of the Think Local First campaign, the town has a copy of a Think Local First campaign manual that was developed by Bali. It's like, I don't know, about an 80-page manual of how to do a campaign like this. And so my suggestion on that would be to ask the ESC to review that manual and come up with some proposals for how the town could support that kind of campaign and how we could engage with Local Motive or other business groups on that. In terms of the banking investment, we're doing that. I don't know that we want to add anything at this point. In terms of the revolving loan fund, I would like a report from staff on any ideas they might have or be able to generate on how to increase the funds available in that. And I would like us subsequently to ask ESC to look at the review that's recommended here. But, you know, that the first thing we'd ask ESC is to look at the Local First campaign, subsequently at the review of the revolving loan fund. I think the pursuit of stimulus funds, again, is something staff's already involved in, but maybe there are some ideas here that Steve, you all have not looked at or not thoroughly investigated, and that you could. And then in terms of the branding, you know, I think there's a suggestion in the sheet that Gary just reviewed for us on how to develop that process. But my sense is that it might be a good idea to first refer this to James and to ask him to, like, find out, maybe get in touch with some advertising companies with this kind of experience in the area and get some ideas of how they would pursue something like this, you know, given the values of Carborough and the kind of community participation we want and what the cost might be. And that way we'd have something to then, if we want to follow the recommendation of taking it to ESC and appearance commissioner, if we want to move forward ourselves, we'd have the foundation for that. So that's kind of running through those six, what I was thinking of as we were going through that.
Sure.
With regards to the advertising recommendation,
the branding,
is it your thinking in making this proposal that it would be a part of this budget cycle or a future budget cycle?
That's a really good question, Joel.
Thank you. Because, you know, I've got to think about the bottom line.
No, so we do. And it's hard for me to – I mean, the task force is recommending that we do it in the next 6 months.
Right.
That we initiate this. And I think what I would do in making this recommendation is pass the buck on that to Steve. that to look at – you know, in terms of determining what the costs
are,
and whether it's something, you know, if it's on the low end of that cost scale to try and accommodate it this year. If it's not, then we may have to.
Right. Okay. That's fine. It's just, it was a question I had.
Well, yeah, and if I can follow on that, I think what I was actually thinking, I agree with the basic thrust of what all you're getting at there, Dan. But what I was actually kind of expecting or thinking for this meeting is that we would probably refer this entire report to the staff and ask them to come back to us with some proposed next steps to take out of it. And if I might be so bold as to suggest perhaps taking into account the more specific suggestions that you were making at this point as far as who might take a closer look at which aspects of this.
As I'm looking through this, it's a lot to digest even three or four times. There's a lot on shopping, and there's a lot on, I mean, there are sections on local healing, local auto, local eating, and local shopping. I'd like to see.
Did your husband text you?
No.
Okay.
I'd like to see more emphasis on the trades. Mm-hmm. Because people don't tend to think of that, mm-hmm. like plumbers and graders and painters and electricians. And so when we're doing a brand local, I think we need to encourage people to be using those, to be using those as well, because those are actually, in many cases, better paying jobs than working in a coffee shop or a gift shop, and they're longer lasting. So I'd really like to see as much emphasis on that as on shop local.
One of our specific recommendations under the first recommendation, we talk about industry-specific promotions, and one of the specific promotions was for the trades.
Right, but there's, I think there's also the bulk of the emphasis, if you're just glazing over this, would be on shopping. And that's great, because we need that, but I want as much on like these other things, because that's where the real economy is.
Well, I agree with you.
I had a question, because Mark, you recommended that the entire document go to staff, which I agree with, but I also think Dan started to pull out some specific recommendations for the ESC, which if we could just clarify what those are. And Dan, did you?
Well, I would. I mean, I'm fine with what Mark's suggesting overall, but I would like ESC to go ahead and start digging into this question of the Think Local First campaign, because that's such a big topic. Staff's not going to do a Think Local First campaign. You know, the town isn't going to do much of it either. But I think, you know, ESC is positioned to spend, you know, some time focusing on that. And I think there's time on the upcoming agendas for them to do that. So I don't see any reason.
Well, we could. Why don't we kind of meld those two specific items together and refer the Think Local issue to the ESC
and
more or less
else.
Immediately, and everything else to the everything, including that, to the staff, because I think
I wanted to get a little more clarification on one other item that was recommended that ESC take a look at, and that is following and measuring the local lending.
The local lending.
Lending.
Right. You mean our revolving loan fund, or?
Well, it was
under the banking.
Under the banking.
Oh,
under.
And
so.
Okay.
Is.
Well,
is
we have. We're. You know. This the banking issue is scheduled to come back to us next week.
Right. That's why I'm asking if that's something that we want to hold off on and at a later point.
Oh, I see. Whether we might incorporate that into our thinking. Well, we don't have to decide that.
But I just didn't want it lost.
Put that thought out there for between now and next week.
Yeah.
And let me just add in that regard that, you know, the information that I've obtained about the various banks' lending practices, I got from the people at the Community Reinvestment Act North Carolina office over in Durham, and they basically work year-round with the data they get from the federal government, primarily HUD data on banking practices. And, you know, I think they're available to help us, you know, ongoing in terms of answering those kinds of questions. Just putting that out there.
Okay. I think good resource to know that. Yes, sir.
One recommendation I think that is a little more time sensitive, considering the federal funding and how this money's come out, is the pursuing the stimulus funds. And so I think we should, I know Dan in the past suggested or wanted staff to look into the possibility of hiring someone for that specific purpose to look into stimulus funds, understanding that staff currently is spread thin. And so I wanted us to consider that possibility I just wanted to point out how I think that's something that we may want to prioritize, considering, you know, the time frame for stimulus funds could dry out.
Well, why don't we make that a part of the motion in terms of the matters that are being referred to staff here?
So do you need me to restate the motion?
She's smiling and nodding.
Okay. So the motion is to refer the Think Local First item to the ESC to begin investigation, to refer the entire report to staff for suggestions on next actions, including whether
there's would be benefit in hiring a short-term staff member to pursue grant opportunities under the stimulus.
Okay.
That's me.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed? Matter passes unanimously. Thank you again, Gary.
I have one other motion.
Oh, yes, sir. Go ahead.
Which is that we extend our appreciation and thanks to the members of the task force for their 18 months of
yes.
hard work.
And Sammy. Good leadership, Sammy. Good
thanks,
job.
Gary.
And town staff.
Really.
As well.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay.
Could I just mention, and I know you all looked out there, but I'm not sure everybody knows that both Peter Lee and Victor Jimenez both served on the LLE, and they sat through a lot of meetings, here. Including tonight.
Including this one.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks,
so
gentlemen.
Much.
All right. Let's see. We are on agenda item, I believe it's B2. Discussion of a process to revise land use ordinance text amendment on affordable housing.
That sounds exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. Mr. Manager, do you have a presentation on
this? No, you all had asked to bring this back. I think it was originally a part of the motion to set the hearing. And Trish has tried to provide a little bit more clarification about what this really is, and you all wanted to talk about it again. So Trish is available if you all have questions.
Remember, we moved this from the retreat.
Yes.
Yeah. To today.
Actually, we moved it from the meeting 2 weeks ago to the retreat to today.
Right. And since I'm the one who asked us to move it when other people wanted to act precipitously at that meeting, I'll begin with kind of laying out my concerns. So first, I basically want to make 3 points. One is that this agenda item comes before us originally because of a idea I floated with Dowling about how a strategy for reducing the government subsidy required to maintain the affordability of the units. And we've heard from him repeatedly over the last year or so about the millions they're going to need over the next whatever it is years to do so. And so this is a way to reduce those. So one option for us still is to just go ahead and do that if we're inclined to. I don't know if people have thought about that or not. Then there's the question of the committee. And so, you know, Dowling, for his purposes, invited some developers to meet with him and talk about our ordinances, and then came and said, well, do you want to set a couple aldermen to meet with us? And, you know, we're easy, and our initial reaction was like, yeah, sure, we'll do that. But I think we need to reflect on if we want to review our affordable housing regulations, do we want to be more clear ourselves about, A, what the charge of a committee be, and who should be on it, and actually create that as a town committee, or are we just going to be, you know, kind of like go along with what's going on? I mean, and those are just two options I'm laying out. Then the third question has to do with timing. And to me, this is the most important because I don't know if the rest of you have been following this, but Chapel Hill is probably about to pass their inclusionary zoning regulation this spring. It went before their planning board last month and received a positive, I believe unanimous, but I'm not sure of that, recommendation. And it's coming to council sometime in the next month or two. I would like us to consider inclusionary zoning modeled on what Chapel Hill's doing, why, or at least using what Chapel Hill's doing as a starting point, because they've basically spent 4 years working on that. And they had an 18-person committee that supported the development of this ordinance because from the standpoint of being able to legally support it, there were two things that they had to do. One was they wanted a diverse representation of interests in the committee that was vetting this, and they also had a study done by a UNC class on that sort of justified the need for inclusionary zoning based on an actual study of the effect of development on housing affordability in Chapel Hill. So to make a long story short, without getting too much into all that detail, I kind of feel like my own suggestion would be that we not do anything at this time and that we wait and see what Chapel Hill does later in the spring. And at the time, presuming that they pass an ordinance, that we invite probably Councilmember Green to come and kind of lay out for us how they develop this, and perhaps also Stuart Cowan from the planning school, who did the study for them, and ask them to come and talk about that. And then if we choose to pursue inclusionary zoning, that then the overall review of our affordable housing policies could take place in that context. And I'm saying rather than start one committee now and start thinking about changes, but in a different context, we may look at them differently.
Jackie, and then Joel.
What does their new plan do about payment in lieu?
They have payment in lieu.
Allowed under limited circumstances, I think, under their proposed plan that's forthcoming, from what Sally told me. But I think it's their Chapel Hill has been, the Chapel Hill Town Council has actually been at least as, if not more, committed to ensuring that they're getting the housing within the developments that are built compared with what we've done, actually.
Right. Well, yeah, which has caused some issues with payment in lieu where you want to use it for other things.
Right.
So I would want to be really careful. And maybe use theirs as a jumping off point. I wouldn't want to, I think payment in lieu is really important for meeting some of the housing goals that we have and for sustaining some of our existing housing
Absolutely.
Stock. Yeah.
I think I'm sorry, you were next.
Thank you. I don't have a problem with that approach, but I don't think that's the only approach that's going to work. And I think the board needs to look at sometime, maybe, and I've said this before, so I'll say it again, I sound like a broken record, but I think we need to use what authority we have to incentivize some types of development and de-incentivize other types of development.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think we've been looking at it. To me, we look at inclusionary zoning as the panacea, but I don't think that's going to be the only panacea that's going to work, given the regulatory climate that we live in.
I like what you're saying, Joel. I was just wondering how or whether there's something staff can be doing or an advisory committee to make us see what other options exist beyond inclusionary zoning.
Well, let me raise two kind of related issues that however and whenever we're going to proceed, I hope we'll look at least one of these, maybe both of them. But our current system doesn't ever encourage anybody to reach, to create affordable rental housing for people who live on Social Security disability income.
Thank
you. People who are at like 20% of area median income, or for that matter, even people who, work for minimum wage and make, 25% of area median income. And those folks in that income category, it wouldn't be a home ownership kind of thing. It would be more of a rental kind of situation. But the point is that nobody ever builds that.
Right.
And part of what Jackie's getting at in the payment in lieu issue is that's at least some money as a resource to do some of that type of development. But the point I was going to make is just that our system, as it's currently constituted, it treats all affordable housing units the same. It says that creating almost free apartment through the CASA program for people who are transitioning out of homeless shelters, that is an affordable unit that is the same as one that's priced for somebody who makes 80% of area median mm-hmm. income. Whereas the amount of, either public or private resources going into creating those two different situations are very different. I would like to see us have, and I don't expect a whole lot of developers are going to come in with proposals to build rental housing for people with Social Security disability income. But I think, you know, if there was somebody who wanted to incorporate some element of that, that would be great. That would be fine. That would be a very acceptable scenario. But they would need to be, they would deserve more credit, is the point I'm getting at, for having created such a unit. And to say simply 15% of X number of units that are in development doesn't really give that person any reward for doing that type of thing.
Yes. Right.
So,
and like, there's a need for almost a sliding scale that kind of matches what the need
so that, right. And I don't, you know, how that does or doesn't fit in with an inclusionary right. ordinance or with an incentive-based approach or whatever, but I'm saying I think we ought to reach that question because we do have we have a lot of people who are hurting at a lot lower income levels than we're currently reaching.
We're doing great at reaching graduate students not that great at reaching truly, truly poor people, and we got to turn that around. And the Orange County Partnership on Homelessness is slowly working on that, but I'm tired of putting money towards grad students.
Let me say this, though. Even if they're not grad students and there are people who work every day in a what I call moderately income salary, mm-hmm. and which would be police officers and firemen and what
teachers,
have you, school teachers, we aren't producing enough housing for them at all. I mean, they're in the almost same position, if you will, as people who make 20 and 25% of median. I mean, I don't disagree with you, but I'm saying I think we need to look at that zone just a little bigger.
Right.
So if I may.
Well, let me finish up on what my second point was, which dovetails with the point that you were just making. It's interesting, you know, to take note that, so I believe that 100% of area median income for a family of four in our statistical area would be, because our statistical area includes areas outside of Orange County that are somewhat lower income, it works out to be about $60,000 a year, which, you know, $60,000 a year sounds like a pretty good salary. But the problem is that when you begin to divide that four ways, you know, if you're saying that's the total income for the household, it's really more like two adults and two children, and each of the adults working a $30,000 a year job, you know, which for example, we're an employer here in town who has some positions that pay that kind of money.
And you can't find a house for $150,000.
Well, right, and it's a difficult, and right. I mean, right. And basically, the point is that at 100% of area median, and you're really stuck.
Yeah.
You know, you don't qualify for any subsidy, you don't qualify for any help, and yet the price, you know, that houses are starting at, you know, I don't know what new construction houses are starting at this point, but
since
you know,
there aren't any.
Way up there, and
800,
and yet the land trust, as it's currently constituted, cannot really get into the business of trading in houses that are selling to people above 80% of area median,
right.
because the IRS says,
right.
if you do very many transactions above that threshold, we're going to take away your.
Right.
Well, I discussed this issue a little bit with the UNC Community Development Law Clinic and also some with the staff at the Land Trust recently, and raised the question, without boring you with those of us who are lawyers can meet separately later and I'll explain the legal ideas underlying this, but without boring you with the legal details, you know, I think there is. I think it's clear that there is a way to structure the land trust or a companion organization controlled by the land trust that would have a different tax status and that would be able to do some transactions at a somewhat higher level, and part of what I'm getting, how this fits in with what I was getting at before is. that, for example, if somebody wanted to come in here and say, well, I'm not going to do 15% of housing to reach people at or below 80% of median income, but I'm going to do 50% of all housing in my development, or 100% of all housing in my development to reach certain other income criteria that are slightly above that, would we as a community be willing to hear about that as a way of meeting our affordable housing issues? That's just the question that I wanted to put out there.
Which we did for Viridian, by the way. Mm-hmm.
Essentially, it is.
Then the only thing question is, which we have to talk about, is how is that going to be funded? Is that going to be funded by the private sector, or is that going to be funded by the nonprofit sector, something that is not quite?
Well, here's all I'm willing to say about that so far is, I think that if, based on my conversation with some of the folks on the land trust staff, they felt like they'd never really been asked to look into this concept. Very far, and they hadn't spent a whole lot of staff time on it. And I'm not saying we should ask them, we should decide right here and now to ask them, but I want to put it out there for y'all to think about whether we should formally make some kind of request about looking into this issue and pass that along at some point to the land trust. Now, how all that really helps us figure out what we're doing with this committee or whatever, I don't know. But
I don't have a problem with that.
I just want to get it out there.
But I think we can't, I don't think we can expect a similar situated organization like the land trust to do all the pulling for that 120%. I think, like we avoid having, well, until I guess they decide to privatize ABC stores, but, you know, we avoid putting certain types of activities near certain types of places. You know, we don't have strip clubs next to schools. I don't know why I always think of that example, but I do.
It's interesting.
I know. The best one I can think of.
Where do we have strip clubs?
No, we don't, and we don't want them because they have a lot of attendant problems, which I won't go into. But what I'm saying is I don't think we should think of using just one tool. I think we should look at multiple tools. Mm. Because I think the private sector has a place for producing that type of housing or dwelling places.
Lydia and Dan.
I was going to say I agree with you, Mark. I think we should at some point ask the land trust to look into that a little because I went to a presentation by some folks with the clinic from UNC. Talking about it. And I think the difference here is there's a new tax model out there mm-hmm. that's not totally nonprofit. Mm-hmm. It can be it's a hybrid kind of for-profit group that can also do some type of affordable housing, but also somehow retains a way to also make some profit. There's a couple of different hybrid tax models out there in the last two or three years that might be applicable as well.
Well, sorry, Dan.
So I think this is all really, really good discussion and all important ideas, and I think what it underscores is my second point at the outset, which was my feeling that, you know, we're not ready to just put two people on a committee and say that's enough. So my suggestion at this point is that we ask Steve to get in touch with Roger Stansall in terms of finding out what the timing is for Chapel Hill reviewing the inclusionary zoning, and that subsequent to that, we schedule another work session, which is not just to talk about inclusionary zoning, but perhaps to get a presentation on that, talk about do we want to have a committee that looks into inclusionary zoning, and what else do we want to charge that committee with in terms of reviewing our affordable housing options in terms of all the things we're talking about tonight, and that would presumably happen later this spring.
I take that as a motion.
I'll second that. I think it's important to look at what Chapel Hill has and do it in that order. But Mark, one last thing that you had mentioned, and that's the question of diversifying housing stock. Is that something that?
I guess where I'm at on that is I wanted to bring it up tonight. I'm hoping that y'all will think about it and that sometime. After we've had some time to think about it, we can bring
it come back to it.
Back on that.
Okay. Excellent.
Excuse.
when we talk about that, I think we also need to talk about the IFC's proposed new not-quite shelter.
I don't know what you're referring to.
What I'm referring to is the IFC is saying that if and when they open the new men's facility over on Homestead Road.
The shelter.
That's going to, I'm calling it a men's facility for a reason.
Okay.
That's going to be using the same model as Project Home Start, which is the women and children's place. Mm-hmm. It's not a bad model. It's not a bad thing to do. However, when they do that, people who don't qualify for that program are not going to be served by that program except in emergencies. And this is public statements that are going out, which means that this group of chronically homeless people or people who are most in need of like the Housing First model, people who are the least able to make it through a program like Home Start. People, there will always be people who, for many reasons, don't achieve goals, even therapeutic goals, in a good setting. The IFC is saying this, and I don't disagree with them, but they're saying that the people not in that program will be the county's responsibility, could be our responsibility because our streets. That's one of the reasons, along with what I've been learning on the project to end homelessness, that I don't know how, after 25 years, I don't know how, to really push people to address the permanent housing needs of the people at the very bottom of the ladder. You know, I applaud what the IFC is doing with the new men's facility, but they are saying that it will be up to the rest of the community to serve and to find solutions for the folks that don't qualify for that program. They will take those folks when it's freezing or boiling outside, but not on the basis that we've come to expect with the facility on the corner of Rosemary and MLK. There are models all over the country of Housing First, where people get not a shelter, but their own place to live, and then you wrap the services around them. That's what the Project to End Homelessness in 10 years, and I hate that name because it just makes it into a joke, is working on. And we have got to find the money and the resources to provide for the people at the very bottom. And I'm getting, after all these years that I've been on this board and before that working at the shelter, it's like we're just not getting there because we're providing housing for all these other very, very worthy people. And we're facing a critical point in the community where when the economy improves and the IFC gets through some stuff they have to get through out on Homestead and that place is built, there are going to be people who are the most difficult to serve. We have never, ever, ever as a community addressed permanent housing for the hardest. And I don't mean to rant, but, yeah, I do mean to rant on this one.
I want to add that.
It's a work session. You can rant.
You know, what got me thinking about, you know, the genesis of this whole agenda item that, you know, we need to reduce the reliance of the land trust on public subsidies, on those ongoing subsidies, is serving on the home committee and seeing every year the requests that come in from the agencies that are dealing with the very severe problems that you're talking about, you know, that are in a way, you know, much more critical in a certain sense than what the land trust is dealing with in terms of the populations and how limited the funding is, and that we need those home and CDBG funds to be able to direct to those programs as much as possible. So yeah, I agree with you.
We've got it, and Carver needs to take the lead on it. The county is going to end up 2 years from now, listen to this, Joel, the county's going to end up in the position of the IFC saying, we're not handling that part of the population. Merry Christmas. You know, so.
Mine's a totally different.
Okay, so before you do that, let me just point out that I believe we do need to have a brief executive session after or at the end of this meeting.
Okay.
So.
And Dan made a motion, and I second it, so.
We have to vote on that first.
Yeah.
Yes. So why don't we do
was
that?
Was I in favor of it?
Yes,
you were.
All those in favor of Dan's motion? You just have to rewind the tape and watch.
Sarah knows what the motion is.
All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed? Matter passed unanimously, yes.
Two things to the our MPO representatives and to our partnership representatives. When the opportunity comes up, I know this is, I sound like a broken record. This is my broken record night. I've been taking the bus completely from Chapel Hill, because it drops me off downtown. Chapel Hill to Raleigh, Raleigh to Chapel Hill, and back to Carrboro. There needs to be a simple discussion about, at the bus shelters, how do you know which bus to catch? Because the signs are not neat.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are pulled out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so let me just be the loud complainer about this.
That sounds like tribal transit, if it's between...
No. It is Chapel Hill Transit.
It's Chapel Hill Transit.
Triangle Transit, you know where the 500, the 550, the 600, and the 650 are. And the 402, just in case you want to go to the mall instead of coming home.
So you're not talking about the ride, you're talking about the other ones.
The other one. I'm talking about the ride from once they drop you off. There's no sign that tells you you need to go to this place to get to the J bus or the CW bus. It's very confusing. Very confusing. And if it's confusing to me, it might be confusing to somebody else. And you can get it on the website, but what if you don't have a computer at home to check it on the website? So I'm just saying, if there are any like small $100 or $150 funds to get that little sign up, the little blue signs are great, but when you're in downtown Chapel Hill, it's very difficult to know to go to which place to pick up which bus.
That's a good point. Steve, can you pass that on to Steve Spade?
That's my slight rant.
I received an email from someone who was wondering if there was a chance to have the Triangle Transit Authority from Durham's bus come all the way into Carrboro.
I think we've actually explored that before, but the answer was that the ridership wasn't quite there then.
Yeah, I'm always pushing for it. It comes to Franklin Street right now, mm-hmm. and in fact, I'm kind of. It doesn't come to. Well, anyway, yeah, I'm on it.
Okay, cool.
we do not have. Can somebody remark upon this intelligently? We do not appoint anybody to the TTA. Board of Directors?
No,
we don't. Correct. They've had Chapel Hill.
Chapel Hill has an appointee on that board. Mm-hmm. And I guess that board's probably defined by state law. But
I believe it's Ed Harrison is their appointee.
Well, that's a decent appointee.
Yeah,
used to be strong. I think that's an issue that we should have a discussion with TTA and its various stakeholders at some point about.
I agree.
I wanted to second what Jackie was saying. I think it's very easy or only possible to affordably cater to people who are not at the lowest level in our society. And so it's a huge challenge for us to realize there's a relativistic way of seeing what we're doing here locally, but then there's also a way of seeing how we compare to other places and how we are a place that doesn't allow for people who aren't of with more means to be in this community. So it's our challenge to recognize that responsibility we have by maintaining a sense of relativity, not just within our own community, but relative to what other places are like outside of ours. We have a lot of resources here, so that should translate to our being able to do more.
Thanks.
We'll find a way. Is there a motion to go into a closed session to
discuss a personnel matter? So moved.
Second.
Been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?